Welcome to Book Talk. This is Alan Farley, and this time it's a conversation with a first-time novelist. Stay tuned. With me today is Kirk Farber, here with his novel, Postcards from a Dead Girl, his first novel. Welcome to Book Talk.
Thank you very much.
Well, it's certainly an interesting premise. I mean, we come across Sid, who's working in a travel agency trying to sell travel packages on the telephone.
That's correct.
But he's getting postcards from his missing girlfriend, Zoe, that were apparently mailed like a year ago, and he's just getting them. And he's puzzled by this, and he's missing Zoe. What was the inspiration for this?
The inspiration actually came from a song. I used to play drums in a band in Milwaukee, and we went down to a music festival in Nashville and saw this band called The Bees, and they had this song called Letters from the Dead. And the song, the lyrics were about this guy who found postcards in his bedroom, and he was kind of ruminating about what, you know, these postcards meant and what he should do about them. And it was kind of this melancholy song. And I always thought, well, you know, I kind of had the what-if question going on in my head. And every time I'd hear this song, I would think, what if instead of just finding postcards in your room, what if they were being sent to you and they were from someone you weren't sure was really alive or not? Or it was kind of a creepy thought, but the song was kind of melancholy, so the tone of the music kind of, I don't know, just gave me the story idea, and I wrote three or four scenes very quickly, and that's kind of how it started.
Well, how did it progress? I mean, we don't want to give away anything that would spoil it for readers, but mm-hmm. His constant companion now is his dog, Zero.
His dog Zero, yeah. It kind of progressed, actually, when I wrote the first few scenes. I had the voice of Sid in this kind of character in crisis, you know, and he's getting these postcards, and he thinks he might have a brain tumor because he's smelling lilacs very suddenly. There's a lot of weird things happening with him. He's also an adult orphan, but the spirit of his dead mother talks to him through a bottle of Bordeaux. And so there's a lot of weird things that came to me all at one time. And then I knew right away how I wanted it to end. And that was really the key for me to know where it was going. But there was that, you know, middle part. You know, one of my writer friends says a bunch of stuff happens, you know. So I had to figure out the bunch of stuff happens part. But,
right, yeah. Including a couple of new possible girlfriends along the way.
Yeah.
And another friend he makes who works at the post office.
Yeah, he befriends, well, I think he thinks he befriends this man named Gerald. And he's the postmaster, I guess, at the USPS. And he's just very curious about where these postcards came from. So he waits in line and he kind of asks a lot of questions. And, you know, he's kind of trying to prod to find out how the system of the postal system works. And eventually he kind of finds him as a neighbor a few blocks away, which he didn't realize. And Gerald's a little bit different than he acts at work. So that's kind of an interesting discovery he makes with him.
Well, he also even goes to Barcelona and to Paris to investigate the postal systems there.
Yeah. He decides his best route of action would be to book a vacation package for himself, because as you mentioned before, he sells vacation packages for a living through this company called Wanderlust, and he decides, well, I'll book my own vacation package, and he goes on a trip to the UK, and he stops in Paris and Barcelona, and kind of where, you know, these postcards are coming from, to try to find out maybe where they're being sent from, and he learns some things about himself through those journeys.
His work at the travel agency on the phone selling, I mean, sometimes he's what do I want to say? He certainly is counterproductive.
Yeah,
he'll call somebody and then we'll try to not sell him something.
Yeah, he gets a little agitated as the novel progresses, and he's not really terribly motivated in the beginning, but as it progresses and he's, you know, not getting the answers he wants, he starts to resent the job even more, and he kind of shuts down on people, and there's a system called the randomizer that makes these random phone calls, so he's really just kind of being randomly connected to strangers, and I think he gets kind of tired of this, and so he'll connect to somebody and then he'll just sit on the line and wait for them to, you know. And he kind of does hang-ups and things that he's not supposed to be doing. So he's not terribly productive.
Have you ever done something like that?
I never have.
I gave you the idea that maybe you had worked at a place.
No, like... I never have. That's the funny thing. I never have been a telemarketer, but I thought, you know, and a lot of people have said, why did you make him a telemarketer? You know, nobody likes telemarketers. You know?
Right.
And I think, you know, Sid is a little self-abusive maybe. So he's putting himself through some kind of trial, I guess. And that's why I had him do that. Plus it made him, you know, able to book this vacation that he needed to go on.
And he has a sister who's a doctor.
Yes, Natalie is his sister. And he's got a bit of a tenuous relationship with Natalie. And, you know, he's concerned about these flowers that are kind of blooming in his head. And Natalie thinks he's a hypochondriac, but, you know, enables him a bit and has him go through a CAT scan just to make sure nothing, you know, serious has happened. Because you learn pretty early on that his mother passed away from an aneurysm, so he's concerned about some problems with his brain. And sister doesn't want to, you know, think lightly of that. But she's a little bit of a love-hate thing there. I think, you know, she's kind of moving on with her life, and she's married, and she's a physician, and she's having a baby, and he's still stuck trying to figure out, you know, where these postcards are coming from and all these strange things are happening. So he's not quite where his sister is.
Yeah, well, one of the funny things about the CAT scan is that at some point he has to reassure Zero. No, not that kind of cat.
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, he talks to Zero like Zero's a person, and there's a lot of... they get along pretty well. Yeah, but he's a little worried about the CAT scan when he hears about that. Wait a minute, what's going on there?
Yeah. Well, when did it all start? How long ago was it that you started writing this novel?
You know, it was about 4 years ago. So it's been a long trip here. But it took me about 2.5 years to actually write it. And I wrote the manuscript when I was living in Milwaukee. I'm originally from the Midwest, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I wrote all of the manuscript there with the help of a group called Redbird Studio. It's kind of like my little workshop group, and I'd go there every 2 weeks and bring scenes in. And so that was a nice way to write, because I wasn't just alone. You know, every 2 weeks I had this community to kind of help me along with things. And and then my wife and I moved to Colorado. And it wasn't until we moved to Colorado that I actually found an agent. And so it took about 6 months to find an agent. And then she found an editor, Carl Lennertz at HarperCollins, was interested right away. And so as soon as we moved, it's kind of funny because I was worried about moving away from the Midwest. This is where all my connections were. And within a couple of weeks or months of moving to Colorado, things sort of took off. And we sold the book to her, or she sold the book to HarperCollins. And then we probably edited it for about 5 or 6 months. And then, you know, with books, they sit on the launch pad for about a year, you know, so it's a long wait. So it's been a few years.
And we're talking with Kirk Farber about Postcards from a Dead Girl. And this is your first novel. What kind of writing did you do before you started the novel?
Well, I was, I went to school as, you know, was an English major in school. And I actually had dabbled in screenwriting for a while because I took a year off of being an English major and went into filmmaking because I kind of enjoyed the screenwriting class I took. And I wrote one or two screenplays, and I found that I was really directing the screenplay too much. I was trying to be the director and the cinematographer, and you know, you can't do that. With a screenplay, it has to be a skeleton. So I thought, well, I should be really focusing on fiction because I like to, you know, this, you know, he turns his head this way and he says this way. And it gave me more control. I'm a control freak, I guess. But I did that. And for a number of years, I was also a drummer, as I said before. So I did some songwriting for a while. And all the while I was writing short stories and kind of trying to get some things published that way. But it wasn't until about 4 years ago that I said, you know, I'm going to try this novel writing thing and really give it a go.
So you majored in English, but did you take any courses in writing or workshops or anything like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, there were a few creative writing workshops that I had in school that I focused on. But once I graduated school, I didn't have that anymore. So I was just kind of on my own, and it wasn't until I joined this Redbird Studio group that, you know, I guess the Redbird group kind of mimics getting an MFA, I guess, in a way. You know, you have your workshop and everything in your community, and you get feedback, and, you know, people kind of encourage you to keep writing. So So that was it for the writing, as far as, you know.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, your history as a musician doesn't make itself present here. Sid doesn't listen to music.
No, and I've always found it difficult to write about music, because it's in such a different place. You know, how do you capture the tonality? Even when I was reading like Rolling Stone, you know, as a musician, and you read a review about music, how do you capture the tone and the energy of a song? So I didn't want to write about, you know, a musician as a character, because I thought that'd be really tricky to do. At least I'm not very good at it. I think Tom Perrotta did a novel about a band called the Wishbones that I really enjoyed, and he captured it really well, but I just I wasn't able to do that. So
not your métier.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what was the editing process like?
Editing was interesting. I didn't know what to expect. It was all done over the phone, because I live in Colorado Springs, and Carl Lennertz is in New York City. So we would get on the phone, and Carl, it was nice to work with Carl, because he's actually, he's also an author. He wrote a book as well, so he kind of knows how difficult it can be to do, you know, to tear apart your work and, you know, pick apart things. And but we would sit on the phone for about 2-hour sessions, and we would go over, you know, whole sections of the book kind of line by line, and, you know, what do you think of this? And it was just back and forth. And, you know, occasionally he would say, you know, I really, chapter 4 is just not working for me. Can we work around that? And, you know, so he was pretty, he was very honest. He's very smart, and he works very, very fast. So it was pretty intense, you know, because I kind of take my time when I'm writing and, you know, rewrite things, and it's a slower process. So editing was very quick and kind of intense, but it was a fun process.
Yeah. In your writing, how do you, when do you think of something's finished? Or, I mean, not the book, novel itself, but say a section or a chapter.
Or like a scene.
Yeah,
or...
You have, it's got a lot of short chapters, which I enjoy that in a novel. I like short bites like that.
Yeah. I'm not sure when I know. It's just kind of a feeling, you know. If there's a beginning, middle, and an end, and it draws you into the next scene, then I think, okay, that's good, you know. And I think you could probably just keep rewriting and rewriting and rewriting, you know.
Right, you've got to be able to stop
at
some point.
I think that's what an editor is for. Like, okay, we're done now. Yeah. And we're finished. So, yeah.
Well, so you started, you had the beginning, you had the end, and did you ever, along the way, lose your way or said, how am I going to get there from here?
A couple of times I did, and it was pretty frustrating. I thought, well, maybe I'll just put this aside and try something else, and then I don't even remember how I, you know, made it through. But I did end up kind of just putting things on note cards, and so I could actually see it, so it was a little more visual as far as all the different story arcs go and all the different character arcs. So as long as I could see that things were changing, then I tried to pace it out and, you know, but, yeah.
Did you actually write the postcards that Sid receives?
Did I ever actually write them?
Yeah. Did you actually physically write out postcards that he received?
I didn't do that. No. No, I didn't do that. But, it was funny. I used note cards to look at them. I'm surprised I didn't. I could have used postcards, too. That probably would have been a little inspirational. No, I never did write out the postcards. That just came to me as part of the, I don't know, as part of the voice of Sid, and it kind of all came together at the same time.
Well, and how did the idea of his mother's voice coming from the wine bottle come to you?
I don't really remember how that came about. I think I'm just...
Having too much wine?
Having too much wine. No, I think I wanted him to have ghostly visits, and I thought it was... I think I remember writing something about a wine from a wine bottle or something like that, because she's kind of this whiny person as a ghost. And in real life, she wasn't like that. So she'd kind of changed, and she's calling out to him. And for some reason, I just thought a wine bottle would be kind of interesting. So I think it's the wine bottle that was, like an anniversary bottle for their parents or something like that. So that's where that came from.
Well, now tell us about Zoe, the missing girlfriend, because we see her in some flashbacks.
Yeah, Zoe is she's another kind of quirky girl, and she's interested in travel and in foreign languages, and she even tries out a couple of different languages that she doesn't really know how to speak, and she's very interested in getting out of her of her small town existence, I guess. And she really likes to watch foreign films, and she's kind of, I think Sid is not there with her, you know, as far as wanting to get out and see the world as much as she does. So she causes him a little grief.
One of his challenges to himself, I guess, is to tell her how much he loves her in a different way all the time.
Yeah, there's the chapter where she expects to hear very original ways of saying I love you. It can't be I love you tons or I have oceans of love. It has to be these elaborate explanations. And so he gets into some he gets into some very detailed explanations of how much love he has for her.
And his interest in the postcards and the post offices, does that have any? Did you ever have any interest in the, in? He also actually goes to work for a short time for the post office.
Well, that is one thing I did do.
Oh yeah,
yeah, I did work at when I was in college. I worked at the U.S. or the UPS, and UPS I loaded trucks, and so the scene where he's you know, there's a scene where he's being overwhelmed by the mail coming down these, you know, conveyors. And I definitely experienced that. And going home after working a 4-hour shift or whatever at, you know, late at night, you start to see these packages coming at you and they never stop. And so I thought I would include that in the book as a little touch. Yeah.
Well, now, and I understand that you work at a library now.
I do, yeah. I work at a library now. I work in interlibrary loan, actually. And it's funny, I didn't think of working in a library until I moved to Colorado. And I don't know why, because you're surrounded by books and people
right.
who love books, and it's a great place to be.
Right, even better than a bookstore.
It is, yeah. You can, because it's free. I'm telling you about it. But of course, we buy lots of books too. But yeah, it's a great place to work, and I work in the interlibrary loan department, so we get very specific titles in. So it's I have to keep a pad of paper next to me of things that I want to look into, because we'll get some really interesting things about theology, and we get a lot of things in the library too I didn't expect, like the manga, Japanese graphic novels, and just a ton of stuff. But it's very specific, so we'll get things about, you know, salt and pepper shakers that are from 1967, and someone will just order 6 books like this, and you know, so I get lots of interesting things in, and it gives me a lot of ideas. Makes me want to write a novel about working in interlibrary loan. You know, I always joke with my coworkers, my next novel is called The Library, and they look at me, is he being serious?
No, well, it could has possibilities. Mm-hmm. Well, that is one of my next questions, is are you working on something else now that this is officially published and launched?
Yeah, I am working on something else, and I have about 50 or 60 pages that I actually wrote during the National Novel Writing Month. I don't know if you're familiar with that, I think November is National Novel Writing Month. And some writer friends of mine in Colorado Springs were all doing this, where you actually write a whole novel, 50,000 words, in a month.
Wow.
Which I could never do. But I kind of got on board with really getting a lot of writing done. And so I knocked out a lot of pages in the month of November. And so I have a chunk of a new idea. But then I've kind of been busy with, you know, getting the word out about this book right now. So,
well, do you have a writers group in Colorado Springs?
I do, yeah. It's called Pikes Peak Writers, and at the base of Pikes Peak there. And they actually put on an annual conference. It's one of the bigger conferences, I think. And I'm going to be at that this year presenting, I think, kind of my experiences about promoting the book and doing things like radio interviews and what that's like. But yeah, there's about 400 members there, and they do all sorts of things between the conference and also just like meeting up casually at the little hangout downtown, just to talk about what your project, you know, you're working on, and giving feedback.
Yeah, it's interesting because in a way, writing is a notoriously solo endeavor. You have to do the writing yourself. But
exactly.
And I guess some writers, I guess Salinger's an example.
Extreme, yeah.
Are very apart. Yeah. But a lot of other writers do, and many cities there are groups like this where writers get together.
Yeah, it's really nice. I was like, you know, when I moved away from Milwaukee and I had this community, I wasn't sure that I would find that here, but in Colorado Springs. But this group is even a little bit bigger, and they kind of meet more frequently. And it is nice when you spend, you know, hours in your room for, you know, a week or two doing your writing, to be able to share that with somebody and just get some feedback right off the bat, and, you know, and help other people out too. Yeah.
We're talking with Kirk Farber about his new novel, Postcards from a Dead Girl. How do you work? Do you use a computer?
I actually like to write longhand first. There's something about writing, I don't know, pen to paper and longhand first, and then I'll get the scenes out, and then I can scribble and scratch things out, and then once that's done, then I'll type it into the computer. So yeah, I do like to work longhand, but I have a real problem with noise, and I have a funny habit where I actually have earplugs, where I put earplugs in, and then I have like soundproof headphones. So I have all this soundproof gear, you know, which is funny because I used to play drums. And it was a very noisy thing, and, mm-hmm. and now I need total silence. Otherwise, I just can't, you know, can't focus. But I like to work late at night usually, just because it's so quiet, and just so I can hear the voices in my head, I guess. And yeah,
no voices from wine bottles.
No voices, not so far. Thank goodness.
Well, you know, another one of Sid's he likes to take mud baths, and even digs his own hole in the backyard to take mud, and also likes to drive the car through car washes. Well, yeah, where does this come from?
He's got some strange ways of dealing with the chaos in his life, I guess. And one of the things he does is he thinks, well, what do people do to be happy? How do they find peace and happiness? And then you go to the spa, you know, and so he spends all this money going and doing these expensive spa treatments that he can't afford. And he thinks, well, maybe I'll save some bucks and I'll just build a mud bath in my backyard. And it looks suspiciously like a grave, and he's a little fixated on the death thing. So there's a lot of dark humor in the book. You know, none of this is to be taken too seriously as far as some of the things he does. But yeah, he also finds a lot of solace in doing laps in the car wash, where he goes through the touchless car wash, and he just likes the control and the precision of the foam of, you know, sliding down the window, and everything is very clean, and it's always 90 seconds, you know, to dry the car, and then he kind of does that again. And you know, someone asked me if I've ever done that, and I never have done laps, but I don't know if you've ever been through the car wash. It's very, very relaxing.
Yeah, I don't think I actually ever have.
Yeah, it's nice and quiet.
Well, now then there's a neighbor girl who sort of hangs out around the mailbox.
Yeah, Mary Jo is the mailbox hawk, and she also waits. You know, Sid is waiting for the postman to come, which is, in a lot of ways, like kind of a childlike activity to just sit and wait for the postman to come. I used to do that when I was a kid. And so there is this young girl across the street from where he lives who does the same thing. And she's just this very happy, frolicking girl, and nothing seems to bother her. And Sid is this miserable guy on the other side of the street, you know, waiting for his postcards. And so she kind of, she razzes him quite a bit and gives him a bad time.
Well, I think we've all waited for mail. I know I'm disappointed if there's no mail, but the thing is, of course, 90% of the time the mail comes is junk mail anyway, so I don't know.
Yeah, right.
I don't know why I'm so disappointed.
Yeah, I don't know why. I do the same thing. Yeah, our mailman drops about 6 pounds of paper through our slot every day, and I'm like, well, there's a big noise, and it's usually just junk or bills. But, you know, he's waiting for the postcards, so he's got to see when the next one's coming.
So how does it feel now to have this out, and here it is?
You know, it's very surreal. It's kind of like a lot of the elements in the book. It's very strange to see my name, and it feels wonderful, though. It's great, you know, to see a book in the store. You know, we flew out here to San Francisco and went to a few bookstores, and there it was on the shelves. So it's very strange, but I like it.
So is this your first experience on tour as an author?
It is, yeah. It just came out last week, and
so it's really brand new.
Really brand new, yeah. And it's actually going to be it's going to be an Indie Next pick starting today, March 1st. It's on the March Indie Next list, which I'm excited about. And I just found out yesterday, we were being good tourists, and we walked across the Golden Gate Bridge and everything, and we came back from that and got a message that it made the Denver local bestseller list. It was number 3 there, so. All sorts of fun things are happening, and it just seems to be getting better. So,
well, who are some of the authors that you have admired over the years?
Well, I really like Kurt Vonnegut a lot, and he's one of the first authors that I started reading in high school. I got to read Welcome to the Monkey House, his short story collection. And our teacher in high school took us to go see him speak live, which was just really exciting and kind of hard to believe.
And, what was the title of his talk?
The title of his talk was, I think it was How to Do What I Do for a Living and Get Away with It. I think that's what the title was. And, you know, naive, 17, 18 years old, and I thought, oh, he's going to teach us how to be a writer. And, you know, he ended up talking about all sorts of very serious things. But I was like, when's he going to talk about how to be a writer? So I didn't quite get it at 17. But a strange thing happened when I went to go see him. I lost a contact lens, so it was kind of funny to see Kurt Vonnegut, and one eye was blurry and one eye was clear, and I was kind of half getting it. It was kind of a funny day. But yeah, he's one of my favorite authors. I also really like Chuck Palahniuk. When I read Fight Club when I was probably 25, and I just really enjoyed that novel, and it made me think, wow, I should really try to write a novel. You know, I was just really excited about that book. And Tom Perrotta is another favorite of mine, and I really like Paul Auster and Haruki Murakami and some of the novelists who do, you know, sort of surreal things, metaphysical things with their fiction, I tend to gravitate towards.
Do you get much time to read in your job at the library? Or?
None at all, actually. That's why I have to keep a notepad and write everything down.
Uh-huh.
Because it is very tempting to just want to pick up a bunch of books. But
I guess that's not part of the job.
That's part of the job, yeah. They told us that the first day. They're like, okay, you're at a library, but you can't read while you're here. I think some of the librarians do get to read if they're doing book talks, but that's not what I get to do, so...
So are you going to give a talk at your library?
I am, actually, yeah. Probably late this spring, I'm going to be doing a little talk in the garden kind of a thing and talk about the whole process of getting a book together and how it, you know, down to the cover art and all the little decisions that happen. And that should be fun to be able to do that for my coworkers.
So how was the cover art done here for your novel?
The cover art was decided by Harper Perennial has a great art department. And they actually had Mark Johns as the illustrator of this, who does a lot of really whimsical drawings. And it was kind of surreal when he, again, more surreality, when I got the cover in, because the character in the book is a redhead. And, you know, I have red hair. And I thought maybe they did that on purpose. But I actually emailed him just last week to thank him for such a great illustration. And he said, you know, I have a whole series of redheads that I do drawings of, so it's just kind of a weird coincidence. But yeah, they picked that out, and there was actually two designs. One was this character in this apartment building where he's looking out. I think this probably is the streets of Barcelona that he's looking at, and there's postcards falling on the sky. And then there's an empty window above him. That's the one we went with, which I really like. And the other one was him in a bathtub, because there's a scene in the UK where he's kind of floating in the bathtub and just soaking and just disappearing into the tub. And that was a little too silly, I think. So one of the more serious cover.
Well, here it is, and I'm glad to have a chance to talk with you about it.
Thanks very much. Yeah, it's great to be here.
I've been talking with Kirk Farber. It's Postcards from a Dead Girl, and it's published by Harper Perennial. Book Talk is now available as a podcast. You can receive an MP3 of Book Talk every week free of charge for your MP3 player or home computer. Links to subscribe to all of KALW's local podcasts are available at kalw.org. And that's Book Talk for this week. This is Alan Farley. Thank you for listening.